Hello and welcome to episode number 22 of Light the Eye, presented by the U of I Credit Union. I'm Scott Beatty.
And I'm Robert Rosenthal.
For reasons we don't need to go into, you just nailed it.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm on a roll. 2 for 2.
Sometimes it takes us 10 takes for Robert to say,
put me in the leadoff spot.
I'm Robert Rosenthal. I'm bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and yeah. I'm excited to be here on a Monday.
Because you've had so much sleep.
Not quite so much sleep.
We'll get to that.
Travel adventures are great in the early baseball season.
I did want to point out, 62 degrees outside. We're going short sleep. We're in shorts over here. You still got the vest on. Were you unable to let go of the... Do you dress for the month or do you dress for the weather?
I dress for the vibe.
Yes, you're going for a February vibe.
Yeah, I was going for what's accessible.
Yep.
In the top of clean laundry pile.
I get it. I understand it. I had to dig for the shorts, but found them. I mean, if it's 62 in February, I am in shorts and sandals. There's no chance. I don't want to do anything else. I want to be out, feel the wind.
Yeah, I will say I have conflicted feelings. When you take a trip to Florida for a baseball series in February, and it's nice weather down there, on the one hand, to have nicer weather up here makes me feel good for the people I've abandoned for the weekend.
Yes.
On the other hand, hey, I did all this work to go to Florida.
Yes, and I'd get no benefit from it. This is happening to me with Los Angeles. The weather on Wednesday, it's supposed to be colder and raining in Los Angeles than when I take off from Champaign. So it'll be warmer on Wednesday here in Champaign than in Los Angeles.
The West Coast trip for Illinois men's basketball is coming up, and you are going, according to the song, it never rains in Southern California. So I don't think you have to worry.
It's going to, and I have some buddies going, and we had talked about maybe golfing, but like, how do you get rained out from possibly golfing in Southern California? So we're going to keep our eye on that forecast, and we'll see.
Coming up, we're going to talk about Illinois and a rival or two, because Illinois basketball on Sunday played a rival across the border, the Indiana Hoosiers, and the Illini handed them a 20-point defeat. And in the world of Illinois football, there's a rival who's crossed the lines, and we will see if Robert's brain short circuits or not.
Stay tuned for that. Let's see if he loses it live on the air.
Our producer today is Ella Peterson. We'll bring her in a little bit. We are inside the Armory on the campus of the University of Illinois in the Center for Innovation in Teaching and Learning. Fantastic hosts for us. We're so grateful to be here. Thank you for tuning in. As always, if you haven't, please take a moment to like and subscribe. And now, because Robert's the one in charge of it.
Because it's mine.
Go ahead, sir. What are we
going to
do?
We are going to light the eye.
So, we have this challenge going on that at some point we are going to actually take care of, and that's can you jump 10 feet?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I'm contending no, but I feel that you still have a better chance of that than executing the horse shot that Keaton Wagler did at the end of the ball game yesterday.
You got to execute that shot without it bouncing to the backside of the backboard and being if it goes over the backboard, it's out of play. So if it goes straight up, it's fine. If it goes backwards, it would clip the shot clock. So it bounced off the top, straight up in the air, and down through the hoop.
How much in your fan brain are you delighted with a 20-point victory over Indiana, despite the fact that it was a 7-5 margin,
I needed it for the 7. I needed that one to spin off the backboard because it was 69-51. And that's the nightmare score, right? You win by 18, but it's a 6 and it's a 5. And everybody looking at the score doesn't look that great.
If you held them to one bucket fewer, you would have had a 22-point win, and it would look like, in your brain, 30-point win.
Yes. So the way to handle those moments in my brain is you're still looking for the fair, the equitable score, and the equitable score when you win by 20 is to have a 7 and a 5. That's good. I'm okay that it wasn't, yeah, you're right, 71-49 sounds like a whole different ballgame, but 71-51, that works, sounds good, plays well to the pollsters. Illinois stayed in the top 10, mission accomplished.
So Kylan Boswell was back. That was one of the big headlines from yesterday. Do you attribute the defensive performance to his return?
Partly, yes. I think it's partly Tommy is continuing to play better and better and better. And part of it was Indiana plays kind of right into that thing. Don't shoot the three very well. Just keep the one kid off the three-point line and everybody else, maybe I'm fine if you shoot. There were a couple threes from Indiana that weren't even challenges. Like, oh, you want to take that from the top of the key? Go ahead. We're going to get this rebound, that type of thing. So it's kind of the right opponent to play. They have to have a hot shooting night to beat people, and you just stay back and grab every board and win the game. So it worked out fine. Some teams are a good matchup for this defense. I saw someone bring it up today that UCLA has three of the top three-point shooters in the conference. That's their thing. So we might see something different on Saturday night. But for Indiana, it played perfectly into this defense of, you can shut down what they do. You can let their guys who can't really hit even 30% from three, just let them let it fly, grab the rebound, win the game.
There is a guy that has a website where you can play out game scenarios the rest of the year for every conference in the country, men's and women's, to project seedings.
Mm-hmm.
And you can toggle the games. You could go through and say, well, if Illinois wins this one and this other, all this stuff. Do you remember that? I
can't remember. I know what you're talking about. I know where to find the link on our Slack channel, but I can't remember the name of it.
I'll bring it up to you. Oh, here we go. It is bball.notnothing.net.
Got it.
Okay. And the remaining conference games, he sets probably – I don't know how he sets the favorites.
I think there's a default that's just like whoever the favorite would be if every favorite wins every game.
Right. I don't know how he determines what the favorites are. Sure. If they're based on lines or some
Ken
other
Palm
metric.
Formula, yeah, something like that.
Or whatever.
Sure.
So if you calculate how everything should play out, Illinois is projected at 16-4 in conference. This is conference only, and would be the three seed because they project Purdue at 16-4, and Illinois owns a head-to-head tiebreaker, having beaten Purdue. I played around with it a little bit yesterday, and I think I got Illinois to, let's say they're projected to go 2-0 on the trip to California. But we all know it's a long trip, and it's road games.
Yep.
So what if they go 1-1? You know, figured that out. And I think they fall down to a 5 or 6. I haven't done enough math to figure out what is the lowest seed Illinois can be at this point in the conference tournament.
Yeah.
But it has to be almost a lock.
To be a double bye,
which is 8 or above, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, 4 or above. Oh, four. Wait, it's different now. Yeah, it even changed this year from last year, so I need to look that up.
Yeah,
this year they're allowing everybody in. Yeah. Last year they cut it off at,
15.
Yeah, so, I'll have to look how they do that now. I haven't thought about that. That's an interesting thought of, it used to be when it was 14 teams forever, you were trying to get into the top four seeds so you could get that double bye. But then last year they boosted that a little bit and had three teams who didn't make it. This year I believe everybody's making it, which changes the entire bracket. So I don't know how I'm getting on myself in my brain right now of like, Robert, you should have researched this before now. It's February 16th. It's time to
the difference is if you are a bottom four seeds, 15 through 18, to win the tournament, you got to win 6 in 6 days.
You got to go, Tuesday night is the first round?
Yep.
Wow.
It's 4 p.m. is the first game on March 10th.
Okay.
And then that plays into then the 9 through 13 seeds all get a first bye.
Mm-hmm.
5 through 8 get two byes, and 1 through 4 get 3 byes.
So we're triple bye now. The term we're going to start, I've used the term double bye forever.
Yeah.
But now you could get a triple bye to Friday night.
Yes, if and you're top start in the quarterfinals.
Wow. Triple bye. That's going to change all the nomenclature. Triple bye. Illinois is chasing the triple bye, and really, it's 5 teams for those 4, right? I mean, if we're...
Well,
like they're still mathematically available to some, but we're getting, you know, 5 games left. We're getting down to where there's not many teams that have the chance to get to that triple bye.
I mean, they project Michigan State as 14-6. Wisconsin 15-5 is the so Michigan State would be the 6, Wisconsin the 5, Purdue Illinois 4-3, Nebraska 2 at 17-3, Michigan at 19-1.
Got it. Got it. So there's 6 teams that could technically still get to that.
Yeah. I think for Illinois, Friday the night. Chances for Illinois to win the conference has to be a win at home against Michigan and then get help from Michigan stubbing their toe.
Get Purdue to beat Michigan. That would be huge.
Not impossible, but the way Michigan's playing.
Yes. I mean, that's tomorrow, so that's a big one.
Yeah.
At Purdue with a Michigan player going on someone's like live stream to a profanity laced tirade saying how they're going to spank Purdue and Purdue's a joke and it won't even be close. That's always a great thing to do before going on the road to Mackey. So
that's, well, if you can back it up.
I mean, yeah, it's up to how do you pronounce his name? Lindenberg? Yaxel Lindenberg, like it's...
He's really good.
Yes, he's really
good.
They
have a lot of good players. Yeah. So is Merez Johnson, by the way.
Let's, what's that? You wanted to talk about something else and not get on that subject?
All right, we'll bring that.
Saving all of that for next week. I'm thinking of other things.
Okay.
Serenity now.
Let me share this. It's doing a radio post-game show one season. I can't remember what season it was. Trent Meacham was on with us. Former Illini, and he lives here in town. He's from here in Champaign. And he was breaking down the league a little bit, and he just said, I love the way Michigan plays. And the text line and the phones just, like, lit up. Because fans didn't want to hear it about Michigan. And he was saying from a basketball standpoint, he was just neutrally saying, like, I like how they play, like, this how they're executing basketball.
Yeah.
And it didn't sit right with some other people.
It does not.
He did nothing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
He was absolutely, the way he said it, it was, and there was no problem.
We'll talk about this next week, but, I mean, not just this could be for the Big Ten title. You know, Michigan and Illinois in Champaign, not this Friday night, but next Friday night. Not only could it be for the Big Ten title, you have the history, the recent history between the programs, you know, everything said from coaches, everything said by Michigan players at certain Big Ten media days, all of that. And you have a winning streak where Illinois hasn't lost to Michigan in like 2,600 days. So all of that is culminating in a top 10 matchup in Champaign. On the, what is it, the 27th is the game, Friday, next Friday. So I cannot, somebody asked the question on our Slack channel, is this the biggest Illinois game since Wake Forest in 2004, where you have...
In a regular season?
Yes. If it's for the title, is this the biggest game in the State Farm Center since No. 3 Illinois against No. 1 Wake Forest? You know, the biggest game was probably No. 2 Illinois or No. 2 Michigan against No. 3 Illinois in the 21 season at Michigan. Iowa was injured and Illinois still won. What was it? 76-53 was the final of that one. Like blew out No. 2 as the No. 3 team. That was massive. But as far as games in this building,
I got to think about that.
Mm-hmm. Is it?
I mean,
we got all next week to talk about it, but is
I'm just saying you won a Big Ten title on the floor.
True.
On the last game of the season. Maybe you didn't know it was going to be the biggest game until Nebraska beat Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. But I remember the – I mean, everybody remembers everything about that Wake Forest game because it was such a big thing. This is the type of game that has that potential, especially if Illinois goes 2-0 this weekend or this coming week here in Los Angeles.
All right. Well, Michigan's 14-1 at the top of the league. Illinois 12-3. Nebraska half game out at 11-3 along with Purdue. Shout out David Mirkovic. Who apparently took it upon himself never to have a repeat performance of what happened at Wisconsin and bring any further shame upon the family.
Yeah.
I'm exaggerating.
Underwood shared that story in the, you know, he does the radio appearance with Brian and Dion in the arena before he goes to the press conference. And he even pressed it. It was like, I'm about to share this at the press conference, but I'll tell everybody who's listening because they play it throughout the arena. You know, I think he said he was on his way home from the game, from the Wisconsin game on Tuesday night, and had a super long text from David Mirkovic talking about how it was his fault, that he was taking blame, that he wasn't mentally there for the Wisconsin game, and that it would never happen again. And I put that on Twitter, and there's a couple of, like, even high school coaches that responded to that of, like, that's the dream player right there. When you have a kid who will take the responsibility of, like, you know what, I feel like this was on me, and it's not going to happen again, coach. You know you have a dream basketball player that's going to give you everything they've got. So it's great to see. And, you know, what he turned around and had 25 and how many rebounds? You have 7, something like that. Turns around and does that on national TV. It's a great, great story.
Last thing for you. What is the how much do you savor in your fan brain a win over Indiana in 2026?
So I am
compared to anybody else in the Big Ten.
I always preface it with this: I grew up in the Metro East. In the Metro East, you grew up with this hatred of Mizzou. You know, I have a friend who lives in Lawrenceville, Illinois, right on the Indiana border. His hatred toward Indiana basketball is still tried and true and lives within that world. And he's just, you know, always facing, goes over to Vincennes and is surrounded by Hoosier fans. So because I grew up on this side of the state over, you know, near St. Louis, Mizzou was number one, bragging rights was everything. And then Iowa, because of Bruce Pearl and because of my years here, were when the Pearl sanctions came down, when he turned Illinois in and started the investigation, everything. So for me, it's Mizzou and Iowa and then Indiana. I like beating Indiana. I enjoy beating Indiana. I don't have the same emotions that many do toward Indiana. I did back then, Bob Knight and Lou Henson. That was a big deal. They haven't been good for a while. They had a little blip under Tom Crean and then went back down, and they haven't figured it out. And they're going through coach after coach, and so it just doesn't feel as big. For me, this year, like, the Iowa game felt a little better on the fan meter than this one. This one was just like, okay, we took care of business at home. Now Michigan, because of all that's happened lately, that's probably a lot bigger.
Just curious.
Yeah. I know for a lot of people, again, we're that fan base that doesn't have a true rival. We don't have an Indiana Purdue thing. No. We don't have a Ohio State Michigan football thing. When Illinois fans talk, you know, I'm prefacing what we're going to get to in the second segment. When Illinois fans have talked about their hatred of Michigan and all this and all of what the 2024 game meant, Michigan fans respond with, like, yeah, I don't know if this is offensive, but you don't mean anything to us. Like, we don't think about you at all, Don Draper. So it's always this kind of a thing of, hey, we have these hatreds here, and we have this rivalry here, and we have that, and everybody else is like, yeah, even Missouri for the bragging rights, they're like, oh, we're good. We got Kansas. We hate them. So, I mean, it's cute for you guys on that side of the state, but that's not really a thing. So it's just another example of that, of, you know, have that true, you know, can Northwestern be your basketball rival when the record all time is like 147-45 or whatever it is? That's not a rivalry, so... It's just difficult to have one true rival.
Now, I wasn't at the game because I was with baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the impact of the Orange Crush in yesterday's game. Some people know, apparently Brad Underwood didn't know, that The Orange Crush has been the subject of at least online social media debate. How much energy they're bringing or not.
Yep.
There's a lot of things that I don't know a lot about that I just know there was some calls to action for the Crush to be more engaged. Is that an accurate statement?
I think that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Two things to preface it with. One is after the Wisconsin game, it did get very heated between Wisconsin assistants and Crush. And they are 8 feet apart from each other down in that corner of the court. So it began immediately after the game when Wisconsin assistant Sharif Chambliss.
In other words, help me out here. Mm-hmm. The distance between the Crush
and the bench and the rows bench of chairs
is closer than what you think you could long jump.
Yes.
Okay.
I could definitely jump from Crush to the bench. Let's put it that way. Well stated.
Editor's note. No, he couldn't.
Immediately after the game, Sharif Chambliss, Wisconsin assistant coach, turned to Crush, put a hand around an ear, did the I can't hear you guys now thing, and then kept saying, talk that talk, go ahead and talk that talk, all this stuff. Some Crush guys started yapping back at him, as, you know, college fans at an arena might want to do as an adult is saying those things to him. A couple other Wisconsin assistants started yapping back. A police officer just kind of stepped in to be like, hey, let's all just maybe chill out here. The Wisconsin assistants were saying something to the police officer. I tweeted about it at the time because I'm just sitting there watching it. It was like, oh, this is, we're approaching the edge of something here. Cooler heads prevailed. Everybody went. Other people on the Wisconsin bench are like, guys, let's just get out of here. Let's go. We've celebrated our win enough. Nothing happened. It wasn't like there was nearly a brawl or anything like that. But it was...
It's your typical jarring or...
Yes. Yes. The difference was you don't usually see a coaching staff turn around and yell at college kids and mm-hmm. like say stuff. And guys like Brad Davison were definitely doing that. You know, now he's just 2 years removed from college, so this is, you know, partly his, he was the instigator on the court, right? So, of course, he's going to be the instigator as an assistant coach. But it was that, and some of the things that Crush had been lobbing at them during the game, I wouldn't want my kids to hear, kind of. Well, I'll just say it that way. Like, it was getting testy.
Okay.
And because of that, the focus of that game, and I think people noticed it on TV, the focus of the game wasn't on the court from Crush. It was that bench. And the noise was lower, and I even made the observation on Twitter that, like, it felt like Crush was trying to stay quiet so that the individual yelling could be heard, kind of thing. So it's just the focus went from, hey, they're on the court, we're on defense, make noise, to like, oh, this is happening, and during the second half, we're just going to scream and yell at the bench. And so I noted it on Twitter. I don't think what was said, I think 90% of what was said about Crush on Twitter was poorly stated, poorly framed by people watching on TV. So I felt it was right for me to get on Twitter and say, look, I sit right in the middle between these. I'm hearing the yelling behind me and I'm hearing the yelling from the Wisconsin bench. I can report to you exactly what I saw. Everybody's saying that, oh, Crush is just on their phones all game. Oh, they're just not even paying attention. This was a specific incident in my mind where the insults became the most important thing. Those aren't helpful. It's not going to get in Wisconsin's head. And in fact, it would have been a lot better in my mind if Crush would have just made noise instead of focused on this verbal battle with the Wisconsin sideline. So that's how I put it out there. I will say, to their credit, one of the Crush chairs, I walked to my media seat yesterday for the Indiana game. One of the Crush chairs pulled me aside, said, hey, man, I saw your tweet. I just wanted to say thank you. I think that was a very fair way to look at it, and we've talked about it, and some changes are coming you're going to notice today. And it was night and day. Like, kudos to these kids that they saw a lot of online stuff, and they saw some stuff that was really unfair toward them. And they saw some other things, and they decided as a group to make some changes. And I think anybody watching the game yesterday would note, yes, it was completely different There was a lot of noise coming from Crush. It wasn't the same as the Wisconsin game. It was a lot more focused on just making noise and doing what they've done for, well, heck, since I was in Crush back in the early 90s. So all of that to say, I think it was a good outcome to the whole thing. A lot of what was shared on Twitter was way over the top and unfair to those kids. But there were also some things of like, hey, guys, the insults, it's just, that's not the history of Crush. The history is noise, and the history is get in their heads by a lot of noise and chants and things like this, not individual people screaming single things. So that's my whole take on the thing. I think it had an excellent resolution, and it was really, really loud in there yesterday.
Noticeable. Definitely. I want to bring in producer Ella Peterson, because we were having a pre-conversation, the three of us, mm-hmm. and you and Ella have something in common. You go into it. Hello, Ella, first of all.
Hey, Robert.
Metro East and Greek life.
I know. I perked up so fast when you're like, nobody hates Mizzou the most besides Metro East kids. And yes. I'm like, oh, that's my rival.
Yes.
And it's nobody else's rival.
That's exactly right. I mean, again, there's 700,000 people in St. Clair County and Madison County. That's a lot of Illini fans in the St. Louis area who live for that rivalry.
So Ella, as a current student and a Greek life member, a sorority member, and Robert, you were a fraternity
yep.
guy. So what does this all have to do with Crush in your mind?
So I was talking with my parents about this because all the Twitter stuff was funny. And I thought the main thing I saw was like the hashtag make Crush frat again, which is what they remember from when they were in college. And you kind of look at the issue is just that within Greek life, events are planned to not go to the basketball games anymore. The yeah. events are planned to watch them on TV, which takes away from being a part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so different to me. You know, I guess the best way to talk about it is in football. So when I was in a fraternity, there was football block. And what block meant, and I feel like some students today don't even know this, block meant a fraternity and a sorority would agree to get a set of tickets together, a block of tickets usually in the east balcony, and you would sit there for every game and you'd do pregame parties or postgame parties and all this kind of stuff.
Not part of Block I.
No. It was just football block. And so, again, this is, you know, the Greek stuff is probably foreign to people, but for me, it was, you know, it's discussions at chapter within the fraternity of like, okay, who's our target for, like, who do we want to pair with? Well, it's straight up like, well, they're probably going to go with them, but they were with them last year, so they might choose us this year. You would serenade. You would, like, literally take a bunch of guys over to sorority houses and sing in the front yard or in the lobby or whatever. There was a whole thing, and then you would agree.
And you would sing bass? Are we all in unison?
I was the drummer of the band, Scott. Come on. You would take a song. You'd take a popular song. We would bring a full band. I'm on the drums. I'm setting up the drum set in the lobby of some sorority building. I'm rocking out to some song. We've changed the words. We're trying to get such and such sorority to join so that we can do football block with them the next season. And then all of your events are planned around that. Now, actually, Ella, I'll let you explain it. Now explain what block is today.
Block is just a Saturday morning where you have a fraternity. It's same concept that you partner with. There's just no longer a ticket process involved or even attending the football game.
So it's either watched at the house or whatever, or it's head to the bars and watch the game from there.
Yeah.
Yes. Isn't that crazy? Like, to me, that's insane, because it's like the whole point is get to the football game and be in the stands. But it changed over the years. I mean, I get it. When Illinois was terrible, I'm sure in the years between when I was in a fraternity and when Ella's in a sorority, there was 30 pretty bad years of football. So I'm sure it became like, yeah, this isn't any fun in the stadium. Let's go here.
Ella, have you been serenaded? You and your sorority sisters?
I have.
Okay. Did it work?
We don't really like get bribed with anything, though. It's just like a serenade.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Just yeah. because.
Just because.
You're worthy of serenading.
Does anybody bring sure. a band anymore? Do they, like, we brought amps and a drum set and would, like, play a song and then, you know, change the lyrics to that song to, like, try to get that
song. Were you holding a boombox over your head?
No, but it has that entire vibe. That's the whole vibe of the thing. Did anybody do a band, or is it just like singing?
It's just singing.
Okay. And is it take a song and change the words kind of thing?
Yep.
Okay. Good. I'm glad that's still.
That's all.
I think when I was in high school, it was still the Top Gun scene of you never close your eyes. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yes, it has that feeling to it. It is very Top Gun, but
original at least, Top Gun
again. And I'm talking early '90s here. Okay, so yeah. we were doing Billy Joel songs, like change the lyrics. I am dating myself.
Vienna waits for you.
Yes. I believe it's you may be right.
The stranger.
We may be crazy. Oh, we're just the fraternity you're looking for or something like that. So I was playing drums on that. Isn't that a great drum part on that song? Bloom, bloom, bloom. Lots of flams. So so we would do that. And then it was this like, you know, do you shoot for this sorority to try to pair with them? But then what if they say no and then you're left? Okay, well then, you know, it's musical chairs, you're left out kind of thing. So is it like for the fall, your sorority is paired with one fraternity still, or is it different now?
No, it's still the same.
Okay.
You have one.
Okay. Okay. So I've always wanted to know, what are the chapter meetings like when it's like, okay, are we going with the Pikes? Are we going with, you know, who are we going? Are we going with Acacia? Who is the choice? What are those like?
Come on now. Chapter meetings are
sorry.
Secrets.
Do not talk about what's said at chapter meetings. Yeah. I'm sorry. Okay. We're waiting 30 years to find out like how we were evaluated, but I can't know. I get it. I respect it. I will honor it.
Yes. You know, Ella.
So for basketball.
Ella, you know, yes. She's got a way.
You're just going to keep throwing out Billy Joel songs? Yes. Okay, so basketball, you're saying spring block is done the same way of it's not so much attendance as it is, hey, we're going to pair with fraternity. We're going to go to Cams. We're going to go to Red Lion. Or we're going to do it at a house somewhere or something like that for the games.
Yeah, it's just that the event is not planned around going to the games together.
Yeah. That's fascinating to me. Isn't it interesting that it just shifted from over the years, that it just kind of naturally shifted to, yeah, it's probably more fun if we're doing this kind of thing to go watch it somewhere than it is to go to the game.
It shifted over the longest time.
Oh my gosh. Are you just going to, the rest of the episode is just going to be Billy Joel songs?
Don't put that pressure on
me. My gosh. Well played. There's no way you don't have a list in front of you right now that you're just going to keep playing off of.
Possibly. All right.
Vienna waits for you.
I guess I'm just in that state of mind.
So to try to rescue this, the baseline here is that you're saying that hashtag is, hey, it used to be, a lot of these people were attending games and even part of Crush. And now that it is fully separated from attendance at the game, Orange Crush is a completely different thing. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's just a whole different system than from back in the day.
Back in the day. It's a very kind way to say it.
And you know what, Ella? I think to anybody who wants to challenge you on that, you say, go ahead. This is my life.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Is this the end? Is that the last one?
It's the end of the segment.
Okay. Okay, good.
Because when we come back, we have some football staffing news.
I'm ready to talk football.
And baseball had its opening weekend also, so we want to touch on that.
I'm sure you have a few thoughts.
Just a few. All right. We're right back on Light Beyond. This episode of Light the Eye, sponsored in part by Logic Co-working at the corner of St. Mary's and Neal in Champaign. It's a place for you to be productive on whatever it is you need to accomplish. Maybe it's a work project, a group project with some others, or a place to study, or just somewhere to go think and write or journal. Logic Co-working offers free, fast internet, free printing. There's even a kitchen, lockers, and showers. Logic Co-working is perfect for remote workers, students who need a place to study, or just some one-off space to get a project done. They also have an event space that you can rent out if you have something larger going on. Check them out and be sure to say hello to Emily Atkins, who runs Logic Co-working, and tell her you heard about it on Light the Eye. Well, we got some news here on the Illinois front right before we started the recording. We learned about Illinois has added again to its assistant staff for football, the new running backs coach to take the place of Thad Ward is Tyrone Wheatley. Robert, when you need a new running backs coach, you go to a Michigan man.
It's funny to think, and this is what I tweeted immediately when I heard the news of like, huh, somebody I've booed before. It's interesting, you know, in 1994 in football block, when I'm in the, I guess it would be East balcony that year, Illinois, Michigan, who am I booing? It's Tyrone Wheatley. It's crazy how, you know, college football just circles back on itself. And last year, the assistant running backs coach was James White, who used to kill us when he played for Wisconsin under Bielma. And now the head running back coach, the main running back coach, is a Michigan tailback from, I mean, I believe he's my age. I think he started in 91, played in the seasons of 91, 92, 93, 94. So, yes, I remember all four of those.
He went 17th overall in the 1995 draft.
Yes. Yes.
Which would have been spring of 95.
Yes. Which would have been when I was done with school, but somebody went 5 years because he was on academic probation twice.
Yeah, they're called doctors. Oh, no, wait, I'm
no,
sorry.
No, they're
doctors,
called landscape architects.
Doctors don't go on probation.
Yes.
He was huge in the Rose Bowl win for Michigan in 93.
Gosh, 93 I already Rose Bowl. Know if they do a press conference, I already know what question I want to ask him. So
how could you?
No. So in the famous 93 game at Michigan, which Illinois won, it's the famous Johnny Johnson to Jimmy Klein in the final minute. Illinois only got the ball back because of a fumble. Michigan was running the ball. I think they just needed one more first down, and then they could have kneeled it out. And the fumble was Ricky Powers. And I don't remember why Wheatley wasn't in the game, because he destroyed us those years. And he was a 1,000-yard rusher for 3 years and this and that. But it was Ricky Powers in the game, and Powers fumbled. Simeon Rice stripped the ball. Illinois gets it, drives down, scores a touchdown with 25 seconds left, and wins the game at Michigan. So I've always been curious as to why, when they're trying to get the one final first down and ice the game, why, you know, maybe Wheatley was injured at the moment or something like that.
I think it's a completely relevant question to a new running backs coach decades later. Why weren't you in the game back then?
Yes. It's so funny.
Now,
that
how are you going to approach?
You're telling people what it's like when I go to a press conference, that people will be asking this, and then somebody will ask, well, what's your recruiting background, and what areas will you recruit?
You mean relevant
and
questions?
Somebody will ask these other things, and then, oh, Robert has a question. Yeah, so in 93, what was the deal? Yes, I asked Justin Stepp about his alma mater, who was in the FCS playoffs at the time, if he had been watching the games and all this stuff. And people were like, we don't care about that. I care about that. My readers care about that, Scott. And so those are the questions I ask.
One guy that he will not be coaching is Caden Fagan.
Yes.
Caden Fagan, Brett Bielma announced, is making the transition to the tight end position. Mm-hmm. I found this very interesting because I heard, I don't know where it was coming from. There was just a buzz, a talk, there was a clamor by some. I don't even know who some was, but because I kind of would hear about it secondhand of Caden Fagan should play tight end. Mm-hmm. And my reaction was, okay, well, where's that coming from? He's in the running back. This is before the season started. He's a running back. And then it turned out, I don't know if that was coincidental, but it turns out he's now going to play tight end. And he has shown his prowess to catch and run.
Yes. I think that's the biggest
thing.
And
he's bigger.
His two most memorable plays are probably the catch against USC this year and almost the same play against Minnesota when he was a freshman, when he took it, got the edge. The defensive backs took the wrong angle because they're expecting a big running back to be slow. And by the time they get to the edge, he's gone. So maybe that's part of it. I mean, part of it is once you're this big, it's you're testing the limits of what a running back is, and you're moving on to another position. You know, if you have a really, really big wide receiver, at some point they're like, yeah, I think he's more a tight end than he is a receiver.
But is that an indication he was mispositioned, if that's a word?
I mean, if you go back to his recruiting, like Notre Dame was recruiting as a linebacker. You know, he had other offers and people were recruiting him saying, hey, you're a jumbo athlete. Maybe we make you a outside linebacker, edge rusher, things like that. He came to Illinois because he wanted to play running back and they kept to that promise. So, you know, Coach Bielma has mentioned many times he lets players ultimately choose where they want to play. He will recommend. I mean, he sat down with Isaiah Williams and said, you have a future as a returner and as a receiver in the NFL, and maybe that's not at quarterback. And if you make that switch, I can get you there. And he was just voted MVP of the Jets for this entire season.
Boy, and, yes. Boy, crazy. Oh, not the gang, the Jets.
I thought you were going with another Billy Joel song.
No. I was going West Side Story.
Oh, okay.
But when it came to the quarterback room for Isaiah Williams, he was moving out.
Yes, for the longest time. He had a...
okay, see, when you just say... Like,
oh, yeah, sorry. Throw you off.
You and the thing.
Yeah, see, now I've tossed you.
This has happened before. Mm-hmm. I've dropped a line to you in a text, mm-hmm. and you don't acknowledge the funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then...
It's, you I'm know, using I a different part of my brain.
Validation and feedback.
I'll watch it. I'll text you when I'm watching this back later. Anyway.
You're hard to crack up.
I am. The issue with positions is I think Bielma likes to give advice and then let them choose. And
sure.
It seems that he has given advice in the past. He said in the press conference that sometime in December he got a text from Vegan and he saw his name on his phone and was like, you know, this is the time of year when they're like, hey, coach, I'd like to meet. I'm thinking of entering the portal or whatever. And so he's like, where's this going? And it was, hey, coach, I think I'm ready for tight end. So... it'll be interesting. I mean, they need players there, and Rusk is gone, and Arkin, who played nearly every snap the last few years, is gone. So there is opportunity at tight end.
Well, Tyrone Wheatley, Michigan man or not, really strong resume from both the college ranks and the NFL. Not only as a player, but as a coach, he has a lot of coaching experience. So
yep.
This is like James White plus.
Absolutely.
Because yes. James White was a little bit greener mm-hmm. in the coaching area, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So it seems like a fantastic hire for a running back room. There were also a couple of defensive announcements
mm-hmm.
in addition, of course, to the defensive coordinator, Bobby Houck, last week. So he's bringing Ronnie Bradford, who was with him at Montana.
Mm-hmm.
Bradford will be the secondary coach.
Mm-hmm.
So what I note about that, it's a new scheme, is that they're not breaking it up right now, at least safeties and corners.
Yes.
And Bielma, at least up to this point, has always just called everybody a DB.
Yes.
Even if it's known, okay, Miles Scott plays safety, mm-hmm. or Matthew Bailey plays safety. Like, everybody's just listed as a DB. So... But then they would break up two position coach. You know, it was the defensive coordinator doing one part of the secondary and
yep.
the other position coordinator. So I don't know if Houck's going to do the same thing like that or not.
It'll be very interesting. It's going to be interesting how they – I mean, we don't know even the positions he's going to use yet. Look, if this is – and we don't know if this is. I'm just using an example of from this defense before. I think
which defense?
Let's call it the Rocky Long defense, because that's what all these guys are based in. He was the New Mexico
coach. 3-3-5.
Yes. And people will argue like that's really not the numbers, but that let's just use that as the basis for it. Probably the best known thing from that defense is in the five, it's not three corners and two safeties. It's often two corners and three safeties. So you have a left safety, a middle safety, and a right safety in some of these versions of that. That middle safety is sometimes walked all the way forward to play linebacker, sometimes as deep as a center fielder. It's that, you know, it's the Swiss Army knife player you put there. It's going to be Matt Bailey if that's how this defense does this. And Chicago people would know that when Brian Urlacher was drafted out of New Mexico, he was in this defense. In that play, they called it the Lobo, and he was a safety at times, and you know, because Urlacher was so fast for his size, but that's the position he played. The guy in the center of the field that cleans up every mess. Sometimes he's walked all the way forward and he's essentially a linebacker. Sometimes he is 20 yards off the line of scrimmage, but that's the guy in the center of the field you're funneling everything to. He's your best tackler. He's going to wrap everything up. He's not going to let anything behind him, that type of guy. So that's what I'm fascinated by, of like, okay, well, who coaches that position? Because what if that safety is walked forward as a linebacker 60% of the times? Is that more an inside linebacker coach who has that guy, or do they split the field this way instead of this way? You know, those are the questions I have that we're going to find out of where they're doing it.
Also, Roger Cooper has been hired as well.
Yes, Roger Sterling, Burt Cooper, Sterling Cooper, Draper Price, Mad Men, anyone?
Okay, two things. If you bring up Mad Men.
Yes.
Number one, it's a little freaky how much John Hamm and Josh Whitman are doppelgangers.
It is.
And the voices are similar.
Yes. Very similar.
Yeah.
Led to one of my best Twitter jokes of all time. When Whitman was going through the hiring process, I believe it was for Gross, maybe. No, I'm sorry. After he fired Gross and was hiring Underwood. And somebody's like, he did the firing press conference. Somebody had said on Twitter, hey, don't you realize that, you know, he sounds exactly like Don Draper. And my joke was, it's not a coaching wheel, it's a coaching carousel. Mad Men people will know the famous Don Draper quote with that. So the fact that he was in the coaching carousel at the moment made that the perfect joke. I'll never top it, ever. I haven't in the last 9 years. But yes. What were we talking about? How do we get Mad Men? What's your second Mad Men thing? It's my favorite show of all time, so I'll talk about it forever.
Of all the dark, deep, dark shows out there that came out post 2000.
Sure.
The Wire.
Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm. Mad Men.
Mm-hmm.
Mad Men to me is the hardest to watch.
I love
it. It's so depressing.
I love it so much.
I just can't do more than one or two episodes at once because just nobody ever goes the direction you want them to go.
Yes. Yes. Here's what somebody said to me, and I'm so thankful this person said this to me in like the second season of Mad Men. It was, each episode, watch for the theme, not the characters. Don't root for the thing to happen for the characters. Watch for the story they're trying to tell, just the thread they're trying to draw just through that episode. And once I started watching it like that, it's brilliant, brilliant writing.
I just want to go to like my parents, who all grew up in that era, be like, tell me it wasn't this dark.
This terrible.
Just
tell me there was at least one good person.
You turn around and what do? Yes. You grab a drink, smoke, and have an affair.
Yes, yes.
That was the only way we handled life.
Yes. Signal 30 is the episode of Mad Men that I believe is the greatest episode of television ever made. We don't have time to go into it now. I can talk about it for a half hour. But
this is a podcast about television. I'm being told it's about Illini sports.
And we got here because the new coach
has a last name Cooper.
Roger Cooper. And two of the main characters on Mad Men are Roger Sterling and Bertrand Cooper.
We could have talked about barrels, but we went this way.
Yes.
Okay. I know you want to ask me about baseball.
I do.
Because I ask you a lot of questions. Now you got to ask me about something so I can pretend to be an expert.
First off, what was the timing of the end of both games yesterday? Because I was paying attention and going back and forth and this and that.
You mean the actual time of day?
No, like when were you? I'm guessing you were at least following the basketball game, or you?
Oh, like, yeah.
In between innings.
Yeah.
And then Illinois lost, what was the final, 11-10 yesterday?
Yeah.
Yes. So, rough ending to the series, rubber game, had lost Friday night, won on Saturday in extras. So, how much are you following basketball game, and how much are you just checking the score during?
Checking the score out of the corner of my eye.
Commercial
break. I got the stats up, and I'm just watching it. But honestly, especially on a Sunday of a getaway day of a series, the process of last pitch delivered sign off the air after the post game to getting to an airport, actually getting home is such a, it's just one big long transition. There's not a lot of, you know how that is, the travel space when just you're constantly in a transition and there's like things you have to think about. Loading this, packing that, cleaning up this, getting on this thing, being up in time for that, going through security, where am I getting food, and then, you know, so that whole thing.
I mean, I was, like, at the beginning of the basketball game, I checked the score, and I think it was, like, what, 8-3, 7-3? And then I check again, and it was, I think that's when, I check again, and the home run to tie it at 8 or whatever happened. So what happened to the old lead there yesterday?
Well, you got to hold it. It's a 9-inning game there. So, yeah, just the bullpen couldn't hold a 5-run lead. Mm-hmm. And Illinois, I've seen this before. You score early, you kind of jump on one guy or a couple of guys, and then you stop scoring. The other team starts coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened. Now, credit, Daniel Contreras hit a big home run to tie it.
Mm-hmm.
And got into the 9th inning, down 3. Johannes had a really good weekend. Will Johannes, that is. Mm-hmm. Not Joe Hannes, but Will Johannes.
Mm-hmm.
And hit a home run with 2 outs to make it a 1-run game. But
that was that.
That was it. So just not enough right things to overcome the wrong things done on the baseball side of it on Sunday. It's, frankly, that was also the problem on the opener.
Yeah. I mean, that's the – that's
for those that don't know, Illinois won 1 out of 2. They won the middle game of the series.
Yes.
Very impressively, pitching-wise.
Yes. It's always the again, I'm not a baseball guy, so I boil it down to, okay, going down there, you want to win.
But let's still hear your opinion.
You want to hear 2 of 3, right?
Yeah.
You want to get 2 of 3, and
especially on the road.
And you're on the road, and I saw, like, even one of the baseball accounts I follow, might have been the 11.7 guys or whatever, they had just done a chart of, like, their guys picking series, you know? And that's how it is, right? Like, it's – you can win one, you can lose one, get that third. So that's a rough way to lose the third, right? Like, was it 7-2? Is that what the lead was?
Yeah.
Yeah, 7-2 and then lost it.
Yeah. I still think because it was the opening weekend, you look at, okay, what went – did go well? How can things improve? I see a good level of talent.
Mm-hmm.
There was some execution errors.
Mm-hmm.
They struck out way too much. Mm-hmm. Some defensive miscommunications, but some really flashy defensive play. And some, a couple of guys that, like Colin Jennings, you know, is expected to have a big year. He only got one hit. Mm-hmm. It was a 443-foot hit.
Sure.
Center field home run. But
I saw the catch on Friday night.
By Wareheim? Made Sports Center?
Made Sports Center, yeah.
Cole Wareheim?
Yeah.
Out in transfer right. From... transfer from SEMO.
Interesting.
Southeast where Missouri.
Two of my kids went.
Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Yep.
So now, tomorrow, it's the earliest ever home opener for Illinois sports, or for Illinois baseball, a Tuesday, February 17th game against Butler.
Like 10 days ago, it was, like a week ago was the first day above 32 degrees in like 3 weeks or whatever. And now there's a baseball game tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I'm in T-shirt and shorts.
All right. Before we go, we got to shout out our online detective.
Oh, okay. I didn't look at this.
At least one. This was from our last episode, episode 21. And this was only for the visual. But if you looked closely, or even not closely, it was apparent that we recorded it in 2 different times.
Yes.
We recorded Mike Small early last week.
Yes.
And then the rest of the episode we recorded later in the week. And despite our half-hearted attempts to make it look seamless, like I wore the same sweater and you wore the same shirt.
I pulled the same shirt on, yep.
Yeah. In fact, we challenged you as a YouTube viewer. You wouldn't be as noticeable if you were an audio, of course. A YouTube a viewer, JGroves55, said, notice the light is on the table. I'm not sure what that was different.
The table was different, and when the shot of me, you could see the corner of the eye because that thing was way closer.
Oh, yeah. Yes. The mics were different. I was sitting in a different place. Yeah, that's a part that we readjust when we have a guest in anyway, whether we record at different times or not.
Mm-hmm.
Additional coffee cup, yes.
Yes.
During the Mike Small segment.
Mm-hmm.
The notebook is gone. That might have been the computer.
Your baseball notebook.
Oh, yeah. I didn't have the scorebook on the table, but yep. I would have taken that off for the guess.
That's right.
The table is bigger in the second segment. Well, mm-hmm. appeared bigger. It's actually the same table.
It's a good point. Yes. It was positioned differently.
I had this whole conversation once with my wife. I'm like, is the moon, you know, when it's rising and it looks so huge, I'm like, oh, is the moon, you know, it's bigger. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, no, it's the same size. I'm like, I understand that. I understand the moon is not physically. Moon
just grows as it. Yes.
I was trying to understand, doesn't it appear bigger? And mm-hmm. it's like, it's an optical illusion. Okay. Mm-hmm. The viewer said astutely that I had a different shirt on under the sweater.
Nobody noticed the haircut.
And mm-hmm. like the opening and end segments, I had shorter hair.
Yes. Significantly
shorter.
I grew hair
between the breaks.
Yes.
And then yes. chopped it off again.
I'm trying to think of what else. Oh, I had a different colored shirt on under my shirt, but the beard hangs down and, you know, I was born without a neck, and so it doesn't really show up.
Mr. and Mrs. Rosenthal, sorry to inform you, your son has no neck.
It's okay.
We
just put his head right on his shoulders.
we gave him a body cavity and a head.
Oh, by the way, we were out of regular-sized heads, so we gave him the 2XL. I hope that's okay.
All right, good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Hope you can come out to the ballpark if you're in Champaign, Urbana, or if by chance you're tuning in this weekend, Illinois baseball, or if you're around this weekend in Myrtle Beach area, that's where Illinois baseball will be. So I'd love to see you out there, or maybe in Southern California where you'll be. Say hello.
I think there's going to be a lot of Illini fans. I've heard from so many people that are going to one or the other or both games because they've lived in Southern California for a long time. When are the Illini in Southern California for them to go see something? So I believe there's going to be a lot of orange Wednesday night and Saturday night.
Thanks so much to Ella Peterson for producing our episode today. Thanks for our hosts here in the Army, the Center for Innovation and Teaching and Learning at the University of Illinois. And thanks to you, Robert. And even if I needle you from time to time, don't worry. I like you just the way you are.
I knew it was coming. I knew there was one more. I should have come up with something. Is there anything with light the eye? Is there a Billy Joel song with light? Nope, I got nothing.
We didn't light the fire?
We didn't light the eye.
Next episode.
It's been burning since the world's been turning.
Next episode, we'll take a little deeper dive into Illinois' new defensive coordinator, and we'll join you remotely. Till then, thanks for being with us on Light the Eye.